It's the Les Paul Show.
Hello, this is Jerry Pippin. Recently, we did a program on Les Paul with Boston Red for his Blog Talk radio show. We were doing a tribute to this amazing talent, Les Paul. We're going to present portions of this program here in our tribute. We pick up the show with this recording in the background. It was made off the radio when AM radio was the only thing there. And the NBC radio network, which broadcast the 15-minute Les Paul show each week, used AT&T phone lines to distribute their programs around the country. This is his version of Begin the Begin. Let's bring that music into the 21st century. This is our tribute to Les Paul.
Incredible when you think about it. And we put it up on our website at jerrypippin.com. You know, you put the picture and the name and then the date that they were born and when they died. And 1915 to 2009. And he had just made 94, by the way. Had not been 94 over a week, I don't think.
Thanks to Boston Red for allowing us to use this program as a tribute to Les Paul.
Infected or influenced, ever how you want to term it, by jazz, but he played around with country music for a while. In fact, you were telling me, didn't you, that he had a country name that he
right.
recorded.
Right, Rhubarb Red, the Deep Ellum Blues we talked about during our pre-production was one of the songs that he played as Rhubarb Red.
And some of the things he did with his wife, Mary Ford, who preceded him in death, and they actually divorced, I think, in 1962, had a country influence, no doubt about it. But he was quite a talented guy. Another thing I hadn't realized, and maybe you did in your research, he actually started experimenting with the electric guitar in 1941.
Right, he did.
At a club, he had a post, a board, actually. They brought it into clubs, and he'd plug it in and play it. And everybody would kind of marvel at it. But finally, I think by 46 or 47, he decided to put some sort of wings on the end of it so it looked more like a guitar.
Yeah, he collaborated evidently with the Gibson Guitar Company, and he created something, according to the Wikipedia here, called the Gibson Les Paul.
Yeah, it's the best-selling guitar, I believe, that Gibson Guitar Company's ever had. And that was really predicated on a hit that he had in 1952, I believe. You know, in the early 50s, Les Paul and Mary Ford were hot on the Billboard Hot 100 and on Your Hit Parade. I don't know if you remember that show or not. But they had a little early for me there.
I recall a little bit of the Hit Parade. Yeah.
They didn't actually appear on the Hit Parade, but the
right.
Hit Parade people did show.
Charts, right.
That they
right.
hit songs every week, and Les Paul and Mary Ford had several. Vaya Con Dios was probably the biggest, but there were all kinds of great songs.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll go over some of them here tonight.
We will. He also did some work with George White, blues artist. Very interesting, the kinds of, you know, music that he was, you know, that he was able to do, working there in St. Louis, evidently on radio, and later in Chicago, traveling around your area of the country. In fact, he was in an automobile accident out there.
Yeah, in Oklahoma, as a matter of fact. And to show you, when I said he was determined earlier in our conversations, the fact that most people, that would have ended their career playing the guitar, because he really couldn't move that arm or shoulder for a while. But I think he invented his guitar, or manufactured in a way that he could play it without having to move too much.
Right, yeah, and he continued to play roughly another 60 years or what have you.
And actually, all of his major hits came much later, after that accident.
Much, much later.
In 1952, 53, 54, the early 50s. In fact, throughout the 50s, Les Paul and Mary Ford were a mainstay on pop music stations. And the interesting thing is that he played sweet music, but all the rock and rollers, they used his inventions to the ultimate. You know, he's the guy that started the Echo thing.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Evidently, they were talking about that, and
so I guess Elvis would have been nobody if it hadn't been for Elvis, for Les Paul.
Right, right, yeah, oh yeah, Elvis would, right, that's right, he would not have been there. Les Paul was.
And then you look at the hard rock guitars like Jimi Hendrix and things like that. Les Paul made that possible with his inventions on how the electric guitar, you know, progressed.
Right.
And I guess his biggest claim to fame really is multi-track recording.
Right, that's right.
You got to stop and think about how he did this when he first did the original hits. This had to be the most painstaking thing you would do. That was back when they didn't have multiple tracks. So what would Les Paul do? He would take more than one tape recording, and he would put them and run them through a board, and then mix them manually. And he literally would take the tape with a razor blade and splice his creations. In other words, he'd take his wife, Mary Ford, who could do 10, 12, 14 tracks, but she couldn't do them all at once like they do now in a recording studio. He did them over and over and over.
Here is a good example of that country flavor with Mary Ford and Les Paul doing multi-track recordings.
My baby's coming home, and I'll be there to meet him. With kisses I will greet him. When we're all alone, my baby's on his way. When he arrives tomorrow, he'll banish all my sorrow. What a happy day. By train, by plane, and even over the sea. Bring back my darling to me. My baby's coming home. He says he won't deceive me. He promised not to leave me, never more to roam. Nevermore to roam.
country song, My Baby's Coming Home. It's really amazing, Boston Red, what he could do.
Very amazing, no doubt about that. This mixing and his, I was looking here, also produced, the reel-to-reel audio tape recorder. That was part of his thing, too.
He's one of the first people to take that and develop it into four tracks.
Okay.
And then it progressed from there. But he literally started when it was still mono and would take, we take it for granted now, and actually this technology is outdated, but for the majority of my career in broadcasting, we would take tape and a razor blade and some splicing tape and literally cut wherever we wanted an edit. In other words, you would make it a diagonal slice so you wouldn't screw up the sound or make it go like that. Because see, all of that's magnetic tape, so all the little magnetic pieces would kind of gather around that razor blade.
Okay.
So you'd have to take a single-edged razor blade and cut it diagonally so that there wouldn't be a whole lot of this, I call it noise, there that would cause a click or a pump or a thump. And so people became very artful of that, and nobody was better than Les Paul because he started when nobody had envisioned eight tracks. In other words, a singer in his day would go into a recording studio and you'd have a mic for him and a mic for the guitar and a mic for the piano player and a mic for the trumpet player, and it was what you got was what you got. Now, as you know, in a recording facility, the trumpet player may come in 2 weeks later and put his part in there. And the guy that did the voice track, he may come back and redo it after it's all done again. And so, but Les Paul and Mary Ford are the ones that actually pioneered this, and Les Paul actually did some instrumentals with his own skillful playing, mostly in the jazz idiom, where he showed off this ability. It sounded like there were Les Paul was playing more than one guitar at the time.
Yeah, it was truly amazing here. I was looking a little bit of this. We'll talk about some of these songs here. How High is the Moon?
A major hit by Les Paul and Mary Ford. And it was an up-tempo song, and there's some guitar riffs in there that would be impossible to play for one guy, except for the fact that he re-recorded it several times. So he was actually playing with himself. My favorite Les Paul music, other than his jazz, which I really dig, to use that old, outdated term.
It'll be back.
Basically, what I liked was his sweet music. He did some great jobs of some great ballads. And there was an emotion or a feeling there, not only with him, but when Mary Ford was recorded with him. And later on, you know, he had an album that won a Grammy, I think, in 2000-something, 2005 or something like that.
Right.
And it was with several artists. And he was at his best, really, when he had some other talented people with him, even though at the same time, it seemed like kind of a paradox. He's the guy that didn't need anybody except a bunch of tape recorders.
Kind of interesting. Bye Bye Blues was another song.
He did some great blues songs, some great guitar songs. I put him right up there with B.B. King, and a lot of people would say, no, he doesn't have quite the feel, and he may not. But he certainly had a technique that few jazz artists could rival. There's another guy, you know, from my hometown, Barney Kessel. He was a well-known studio guitar player, and he was very good. I don't know what it was in the water around here, but we had a lot of good guitar players. Another thing Les Paul made possible was back in the 50s in country music, there became something we used to refer to it as a fuzz guitar. In other words, Marty Robbins had a couple of hits with songs like that, in which the guitar was not like the steel guitar, remember, of the old Bob Wills stuff. it was a guitar chord that seemed to hang on and almost to a distortion level. And it was kind of a cross between Jimi Hendrix with complete distortion and maybe something with half distortion. But it was very popular in the Nashville sound, especially in the 50s and early 60s. And Les Paul was the first one that actually experimented with that.
Well, Les Paul was a dynamic person. He also did quite a bit of work with Chet Atkins' brother. You know, Chet Atkins, no doubt about it, was the man with the guitar.
Yeah, well, Chet had the job to make sure he was, for sure. He was A&R director at RCA.
Right,
in
right.
In Nashville.
Right, yeah.
And I'm not taking anything away from him, so don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But he certainly had an ability to show his wares that few other guitar players had.
He honestly did.
He could go on and do his own session any time.
Right, and he did country, he did jazz, he played with orchestras. He was really very, very good at mastering, the guitar. And then his brother, I think it was Charlie Atkins or something like that, it was the one Les Paul played with. But for me, Les Paul was a little different, more along his line, was really a guitar person. Now, whereas B.B., I think B.B., like B.B. said, he plays, one or two chords, and that's basically it. With B.B.
Yeah.
A little bit different.
Les Paul had that down to an art.
Yes, he did.
He could go in and read charts, or he could wing it. Whatever he needed him to do, he could do. And for many years there, Les Paul pretty much was his own entrepreneur. He would just send finished product with Helen and Mary Ford over to the record company. They'd publish it and be a hit.
Well, that's pretty good. I noticed here.
So they didn't bother him much.
Okay.
Other than, when's your next song going to get here?
And he put out a lot of songs.
A lot of tunes. And, you know, one of the things, we've talked about all these great things Les Paul did, but, you know, the one thing that I admire more than anything else, and I guess it's because I'm getting up there in age myself, not nearly that old, but he was still working. What, a year and a half ago?
He was still working, actually, in 2008. And perhaps, I don't know, he may have actually played in the jazz clubs in New York this year. I know he played in late 2008.
Yeah, and in fact, there was somebody, I think it might have been, one of the best salutes, I think, was from KMLX in St. Louis. And it's interesting that that was one of the best salutes, because back in those days, in the Midwest, if you're broadcast-oriented, you went to St. Louis, then you went to Chicago, you know?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Well, that was the career path for everybody.
Okay.
Kind of the way it worked.
It's kind of strange, you know, with St. Louis.
Well, it's just right up the road.
Well, yeah, but, you know, St. Louis, I guess radio was there, but as far as the jazz, Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. But Kansas City was famous for it.
Because Charlie Parker was there,
sure.
Fellow out of your area down there, McShane, who recently passed away. He was out of there and was still out of there. Lived a long, long, long time. But the thing is, St. Louis, yeah, kind of a stop between.
Well, I was thinking more. I was thinking more in terms of not necessarily the jazz genre itself, but just pop music.
Okay.
And you come out of an orchestra. You play at the Chase Hotel, and next thing you know, you'd be in at the Aragon Ballroom or someplace.
You'd be in Chicago.
Evidently, right.
He was there in St. Louis when we started. You know, this our research was with that particular radio station you just brought up there. But they announced that, and they were talking about. Let's see if I grab that screen. They were talking about. He worked with high-tech Bob Hella, I guess is his name, which was on that station for 25 years. Anyway, they're both in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with him out there, and that was, you know, at the KMOX in St. Louis. Kind of interesting, I mean, the standpoint that, you know, how he moved on from there, Chicago, and finally on to New York. Now, I also see here that in 1950, a little before my time, he had his Les Paul show. It was a 15-minute show on NBC.
Well, a lot of people, you know, back in those days, even up to 55, 56, 57, a lot of people had 15-minute shows. Perry Como even had one.
Yeah, he had one. Yeah, I recall his show.
Yeah, you know.
In fact, I think he graduated up to a 30-minute-an-hour show, did he not?
That was quite an interesting format back in those days. It was kind of like, but of course, broadcasting, we did a show recently about broadcasting. Broadcasting was different back then. The sponsors pretty well called the shots, and so they could buy 15 minutes a heck of a lot easier than they could an hour or a half hour. And so they would sign the talent. The advertising agencies themselves were mainly the producers. The networks basically just furnished studios and their leased AT&T lines out to the radio stations.
So, in other words, you were going to have a show.
It's kind of like what we have now. We call it the vanity radio. Some talk show hosts do this. They buy the time and resell it.
Okay.
That's kind of the way it all worked back then.
Yeah, I say TV show? We actually a 15-minute radio program. Sorry about that. I was thinking of the TV shows. I don't know if he ever had a TV show, doesn't say anything here. But, yeah, the radio shows, a lot of people had radio shows.
That was one of the requirements, I think, once you got kind of established.
Okay, but you'd get a...
A little radio show, and then you use that, you know, to work on things.
I can recall.
And that same format, the reason we got off on TV, as I mentioned, that they were still doing it on TV in the 50s.
Okay. I can recall hearing Les Paul and his band, many times on TV. Yeah. He would appear, you know, with various other of acts.
Well, he was a big star before Les Paul and Mary Ford in the music circles, and not in the general population necessarily. Mary Ford and he with multiple recordings, and this technique hit the top 10 quite regularly, so they became big stars there. Then after his separation from her, a lot of people had given him up, but he still worked a lot.
Evidently he did. He won 2 Grammy Awards in 19... He won these 2 Grammy Awards, the 48 Grammys here, and it says in 2006, that's when he returned to do some live performance.
I mentioned 2005. It was 2006. When he won the Grammy.
At 90. Yeah, at 90. And he, you know, just continued on working, I'm assuming, on the weekends or what have you, working.
I think he worked as much as he wanted to.
Yeah,
and a lot of people probably, the amazing thing here, we talked about at the beginning, 1915 when he was born, and you talk to people who are 30 years old, born 1979, Les Paul was already an old man by then.
Oh, sure.
And they don't really remember him.
No, but working some of the clubs... he was, in fact, I see here, he did, there was a tribute at Carnegie Hall to him, so you had Steve Miller there, and of course Pete Frampton. And
Boston Red, I want to take time to play my favorite Les Paul and Mary Ford song, I guess. It was their biggest hit, Vaya Con Dios.
Now the hacienda is dark, the town is sleeping. Now the time has come to part, the time for weeping. Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios, my love. Now the village mission bells are softly ringing. If you listen with your heart, you'll hear them sing. Vaya. baby, I'll be beside you. Although you're many million dreams away, tonight I'll say a prayer to guide you, to hasten every lonely hour of every lonely day. Now the dawn is breaking through a great tomorrow, but the memories we share are there to borrow.